messaged me yesterday on my personal account. I was like, hopefully we didn't get off on the wrong foot, and I just left him on red.
All right, Captain fucking Popular. Yeah, listen, welcome to the Spooky Park Bench podcast. My name's Mike Sim. Michael James Sim, actually, is my full name.
Is it really?
Yeah,
it's James?
Yeah, it's James, yeah. Hmm. I'm a commercial photographer in the United Kingdom. Over the Atlantic is my best friend in the entire world. I know your full name. It's Christopher Michael Sturm.
Hey, that is my full name because it's on my Instagram, I think, right?
I think that was it, yeah, because you want to be a pretentious douchebag.
Correct. I did want to be a pretentious douchebag.
I was Michael J. Sim, photographer. And then I was like, it's not me, because that's not how, I'm Mike. No one calls me Michael.
My middle name is your first name.
Well, the powers of deduction have done you well there, my friend.
I'm a regular Sherlock Holmes over here.
I feel like we should probably sack off this and become a crime-busting duo.
You joke about that, but I think we would make awesome homicide detectives as a team.
Fucking yeah. We'd be like McNulty and Bunk.
No, we'd be like Scooby-Doo and Shaggy.
Who's who? You're Scooby-Doo, right?
Yeah, probably. I think so. I got the physique for it.
I think I used to get called Shaggy down at the local pub, actually, by the elder members. We could also be... I liked the... what was his name? The actor. The guy that was in Trainspotting that was married to Angelina Jolie.
Heath Ledger. No. Kirsten Dunst.
The man that was in Trainspotting that was married to Angelina Jolie and you shot with Kirsten Dunst.
Timothy Chalamet.
Oh my god, this is torture.
Am I wrong? His name?
Yes, you're very wrong. Hold on, I need to do a fucking Michael Bublé on this. That's Google, by the way.
It's not Ethan Hawke, right?
Just stop talking for a second.
Ethan Hawke was in Trainspotting.
No, he wasn't. You're the worst human being in the world. Johnny Lee Miller.
Oh, okay.
Johnny Lee Miller did a really good Sherlock series with Lucy Liu, where she was Watson and he was Sherlock. Yeah, it was actually really good.
When was this?
Sorry, I'm just enjoying my Jimmy's iced coffee.
No, let's talk about our drinks, because we're enjoying some very special drinks. This is apple sidra, which is a Taiwanese apple soda. And it tastes like you're biting into an apple that is carbonated. It's very weird because it tastes very much like a regular, like an apple. It's not very sweet.
Okay, well, I'm drinking, apologies, I work in coffee, we all know, and I shouldn't be drinking stuff like this, but I can't be bothered making a coffee. So I was in the shop and I picked up Jimmy's iced coffee.
Which I'm bummed I haven't seen before.
I'll bring you that would explode on the plane, wouldn't it?
No, they probably sell them overseas. No, you can bring it on the plane. You might have to check it.
Checking your Jimmy's. Bring a vest for your Jimmy in the city of sex, as Dr. Dre once said.
That's
in
literally
California love.
California knows how to party. I'm also drinking in this takeaway mug that I got when my girlfriend and I went to a Christmas tree farm. It's black tea, but it's really hot, so that's why I'm drinking the apple soda first. But this is
just when I thought this podcast couldn't get any more exciting, we've got this.
Aren't we sponsored by somebody?
We are indeed, yeah, but we're going to get to that at the end. And it's definitely, that's why I'm a bit embarrassed about drinking what I'm drinking, but it's fine. We are sponsored.
You can only drink Newground.
Yeah, we are sponsored by Newground Coffee. I shall explain to you just how wonderful they are at the end of the podcast.
But in the meantime,
stick around to hear about our wonderful sponsor and how you can benefit from listening to this podcast and buying great coffee at a discounted rate.
A discount coffee from the UK? What?
Mm-hmm. What you been up to?
A lot. I start my new job on Monday, so I've been getting my car ready. It's like a 25-minute commute.
You can be an Uber driver.
No. I'm working in a photo studio, but it's 25 minutes or so away. And my girlfriend and I usually share her car because I don't know why. It's just easy, I guess. But since we'll have different schedules now, I got to just start driving my car. But my thermostat went out and I can't really afford to go to a mechanic. So I've been doing the work on it myself. And my model year of my car, for whatever reason, they redesigned the thermostat location and the way in which you have to take it off and replace it. So I had to buy another part, basically the entire house. I had to basically take part of my engine apart and then reassemble it for this to be running properly.
Goodness.
So I'm doing that this week. Well, I'm not done yet. I took it apart yesterday, realized that I needed a gasket that I didn't have, tried to buy the gasket. No one nearby me had it. And then I had to try to order it online. And then I ordered the wrong gasket. But then I ended up just ordering the entire new enclosure because turns out if I was going to fix the whole thing, I was going to need that gasket anyway. So I ended up, it's been an ordeal. So I'm waiting for that to come in the mail and then I'm going to replace it. And then hopefully my car will be fine. Should be fine for a couple months.
Is it going to be able to, are you going to have hydraulics on it so you can bounce?
I already have it. It's already.
All right, sweet. Cool. That's fine. Yeah. Just because I know that you're obviously now friends with Big Boy. I assumed that you had a hydraulic car.
He actually came here. Finish my ride for me.
Him and who was it? Exhibit.
Yeah, Exhibit showed up and he was like, "Yo, dog, I love that show."
I love that show. It's like, let's make a car that's going to put your insurance through the roof.
Have you seen the like where are they now? Of the
did it just ruin all their lives?
Yeah, all the cars are like either in disrepair. Or they sold them off or something because they just couldn't keep... Because the things they did to those cars were just nonsensical.
Yeah, it's like, let's put a jacuzzi in the back of it.
Which was fun to watch, but very stupid practically.
Correct. Yeah. Have you done anything photography related? Apart from attempt to send me a scanner incorrectly?
We've both had some shipping issues with...
Yeah, I went to send... Stuff. I bought a 4x5, mm-hmm. A Wista... 45, yeah. And I thought I'd bought the Wista 45 SP, and I'd actually bought the Wista 45 D, which doesn't have front swing. So Christopher very kindly said he'd send me a scanner, and we thought, actually, look, here's a fair trade. Christopher can have the Wista 45 because I've now bought the SP, and I'll send him the 45. He can send me the scanner. I tried to send him the via UPS without an invoice, and you tried to send me a scanner without basically paying for it.
Well, they wanted more than what they asked for initially. And they were like, it's going to cost more. And then instead of telling me, I just had to check the tracking number to see where it was. And they were like, held at origin post office. And I had to go in there and give them more money, but it should be on the way.
Good. But I've been developing film again.
I've done some film developing this week, actually. That's what I have done. I've developed some film, but mostly for my girlfriend.
See, I've been developing film again, and I've been thoroughly enjoying it. But now I've just got a ton of negatives that are just sitting around. I developed some 4x5 as well, which is pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Did you use the – which one? Did you use the 20th century reel, or how'd you do that?
I got the what's it called? Not a Patterson tank. The name of the other one,
the 4x5 like tank.
Specifically. Yeah.
Okay. Does that work? Okay. Do you like that?
Yeah. Great. It's fine. It's really good.
Okay. I've never used it.
Only because I'd heard that people have been getting scratches and marks on using a Patterson tank, so I decided to use a different one.
No scratches or marks.
And no scratches or marks. No.
Interesting. I do get scratches and marks on the edges of my frames sometimes doing 4x5. I just assumed that was just part of it.
I did successfully, so I've shot a couple of frames of color, a couple of sheets of Portra 160, and I managed to, as everyone knows, Portra 4x5 is not particularly cheap, so I bought 10 sheets of that and I ruined the first two before I even put them in the camera. I had them in the changing. I've got like a changing tent, and I put one sheet in. I didn't realize there was so many, like the difference between the way that Kodak 4x5 is wrapped compared to say the way Ilford film is wrapped. It's different.
Yeah, it's a little different. Yeah.
So I got into the Kodak 4x5, and then that kind of threw me a little bit. So I forgot which. So I loaded one side, turned it over, and I went to load the other side. But as I loaded the other side, I realized that when I was practicing before, I'd left one of the exposed negatives in the film holder. So I was like, oh shit. So then as I did that, some of the stuff I'd piled up inside the dart bag moved. So I put that back, and then I went back to the film holder, and I couldn't remember if I turned it over or not and which side I'd put the film in. So I was like, oh shit, right. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take out the side that I think is the exposed negative, and then I'm going to slide it in. So I did that, unzipped the bag, and I was like, if I've done this right, the film sheet that is out of the one should be the exposed one. So I looked at it, and it wasn't. And I was like, fuck, right. So I've ruined definitely one sheet. And then I was like, so now I think that it's in this side, so I'll take that side. So I opened up the film slide, and it was the other one. It was the other one exposed.
You just, one after the other, just exposed them both to light.
Yeah, I was like, brilliant. Honestly, so there's like £12 just gone.
I mean, you know what's funny is like we've all done like something like that. I haven't done it in such a glorious, like, funny way, but like I definitely ruined a bunch of sheets.
Just, I was like, just sitting there, and I was just like, them. You. Fucking moron, Michael. So Jesus. Managed to successfully ruin those. Yeah, and then when I was hanging up I shot some black and white HP5, and I developed those, came out looking great, was super hyped. And then hung them up with two Bulldog clips, and as I went to squeegee one of them clean or take the water off it, I pulled it a little bit, and the Bulldog clips were just a little bit on the emulsion, so I've scraped a bit of emotion on him, but it's fine. That. It's character.
Yeah, I used to really kind of like be precious and worry about like where I clip it, because I worry that like, oh, it's going to touch the emulsion, but it's the edge of it. It's fine. Like, I don't really care
anymore. Yeah, 6x7 is fine because you've got like the frame mark, so it's not really too bad. You've got quite a good bit of height, so you can get a clip on there without affecting the emulsion. But with 4x5, you don't have nearly as much room.
Exactly. You have none. So, you have like this little tiny sliver where the top is, and that's kind of it.
Correct. Speaking of film, we're going to be talking about film, weren't we?
Yeah. I think we kind of avoided talking about it. I haven't talked about it on my podcast, or not my podcast.
We've got to be careful what we say, though, because we've had a couple of people after the last podcast say that we're a bit either cynical or we were accused of being gatekeepers of.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about that first, actually. Because I thought this was our first. So we've had people give us feedback where they were like, oh, this could be better, whatever. Like, people have given us constructive-ish feedback before.
This is also not a slight. This is us not like getting defensive in a slight against what was said, actually. We're just sort of addressing where we're actually coming from, as opposed to sometimes how it can be interpreted.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm not going to call the person out by name or anything, but I am going to allude to our conversation. But Mike, you were talking to them first before I jumped in, and you were being very polite and trying to just be like, hey, maybe there's a misunderstanding. Like, I don't think that's what we meant. Like, you were being very like democratic, and you weren't being a hothead, I guess.
Which is actually really unlike me. I must have been tired.
Maybe, but it's funny because the way that they messaged us in the first place was so hostile that the way you reacted was like, it was surprising, because it was just like, wow, you really kept your composure. Because I don't know if I would have saw that, if I saw that first, how I would have reacted. I probably wouldn't have said anything, and I would have probably consulted you first. But like, I would have been pissed.
We were asked why we thought we were the gatekeepers.
Here's what he said. He said, I don't understand why you guys are trying to gatekeep photography, which is a crazy statement to make to anybody. Not because I think that we are, I don't know. I don't think we're like innocently, we're not, we're just two guys with opinions, right?
I think we both have quite purist views about photography. Like, that's undeniable.
I would say I'd say we kind of do in ways, okay. But I also think that we're really open-minded for the most part.
I think our thing, and we did a whole podcast about it, about inclusivity and how our actual thing when we talk about inverted commas, because some of this conversation that we had with this person was about inclusivity and exclusivity, and it was about Instagram photographers, and it was our use of the term Instagram photographers. Mm-hmm. And our problem if it's even a problem, isn't about Instagram photographers. It's about certain photographers making things seem exclusive as opposed to inclusive. We're all about like whether it's taking photos on your phone, whether it's taking photos on a 8x10, whether it's taking photos with a drone. I don't really care. Mm-hmm. It's about making things inclusive, not exclusive. I think when you find people that are online and they're using photography as a fashion statement and they're using Leica M6s and Mamiya 7s and cameras that are not affordable or easy to use, it is not making it seem inclusive to anybody, because you think, well, I can't be a good photographer because I can't afford a $4,000 35mm camera.
Right.
And what we're trying to say is that you don't need any of that. You don't need to be like, you, these people have a purpose. And their purpose is to appeal to, well, I mean, look, they can appeal to anybody. And it, the bottom line is you meet people where they're at. But what I don't want is for people who are trying to get into photography coming across these people and going, oh, shit, I need that. You don't.
Yeah, that's my problem with it, is that, you know, there are these people who preach about how much they love film photography and how much they love the community and all this stuff. But they keep themselves so far above the community and above kind of like... It's just like, not only do they keep themselves at a certain level, and it seems like what they do and what they can do and what the cameras they have and the stuff they get to do is unattainable. So it doesn't seem inclusive. It doesn't seem like something that you could just do as a photographer starting out.
No.
And it just, it's kind of like anybody can do what they want. It's fine. Like if you want to be a guy that walks around with a Contax T2 to flex, like, fine. Like, all right, you can do that. I'm going to think you're silly, right? If you buy a Contax yeah. T2 in 2022, I'm going to think you're kind of silly because they're very old cameras. They're all non-fixable and the prices that they command are silly. So I'm going to be a little bit, I'm going to judge you in that way a little bit, but that's fine.
I also think if you're going to spend time giving yourself a platform and building it up, then you have a responsibility. You have a responsibility to photographers. You have right. a responsibility to people that are going to watch your channel to make it inclusive, not mm-hmm. exclusive. And I think mm-hmm. that's what it should be about. And like, what I think, because we have opinions and we can be quite vocal about it, it's not us putting, you know, photography down at all. It's about putting individuals or a type of person within a community. And it's hoping that they can understand what we're saying and maybe listen to it. And like, look, I mean, who the hell are we? We know that, right? But like,
yeah.
We have an opinion, and our opinion is based on making photography inclusive, not exclusive.
Yeah. And I mean, over my many years of being a photographer, like one of the main issues that I've seen is just like people who really have a passion for photography and really want to be a part of it, like just don't know where to start. And they feel so crushed by the idea that like if they can't afford what they consider a good camera, they can't make art, they can't make work. And it's just not true, you know? And the way the climate of like the quote unquote inverted commas photo community, film community, it's just become a fashion thing. The reason that seems that way to me is because a lot of these people who are like the top well-known YouTubers or Instagrammers or whatever, they are completely beyond reproach. Nobody can say anything about them. Nobody can criticize them, because if they do, then they're against the film community somehow, or they are, you know, haters rather than people that rightfully want to see some good come from the community and think that some people's way of going about it is kind of gross. I want to be able to say that, like, you know, do what you want to do, but I feel like if you're really trying to interface with the community and you're really trying to like uphold values for a community, you got to talk the talk and walk the walk. Like, you can't just be like, anyone can do photography. I only shoot with Mamiya 7. I take 4 Leicas with me on vacation. Like, and give me a fucking break.
And I only shoot portrait.
Right. Which, by the way, I don't know, you know, I wanted to kind of bring up film prices today because we haven't really, we've avoided it. But just a hot take on the top of it, Portra 400 and Portra 800, the Portra line of film is a professional film. So when people complain about the price of Portra, it's never professionals, because someone like me who shoots film professionally, I don't pay for it like you think. Like, I don't, the client pays for the film and they pay for the processing, right? So I shoot Portra on set and like on jobs. I don't typically buy Portra for recreational photography because it's not what that film is for. That film is for professional work and it's priced as such. One of the things that people also seem to not understand, which is fine because no one talks about it. Back when I was in college, film costs as much as it does now, pretty much. When I was in college, the Canon 5D original 5D Classic came out, and that was like the digital camera that broke everyone's brains. Like, everyone had that camera. And that's when it was, the writing was on the wall for the film industry. Discontinuing films was starting to be a thing, and prices were bargain basement for a long time because the film community was slowing down. Fujifilm was like, we're getting rid of our film division, we're going to get rid of all of our film stuff. That's when that started happening. Kodak ramped down production way low.
Yeah, I mean, 5 years ago, Kodak was on its knees.
Right. And so what happened was the film interest with hobbyists blew up. And then we got this whole film community thing, and like film became like the fashionable thing. And then the demand went back up. And so the prices rose back up to the standard price that they were before, because we now have a market again for film. When we were paying, I don't know, $8 a roll for Portra, that's because they were selling it to nobody. There was no market. Yeah. But now that the market's back, the demand is there, and now it's coming back up to prices that are going to be competitive with other film. And it's just like, that's just how it works, right? And so I see kids, I'm not making fun of anyone, but I see people on Instagram complaining about the price of Portra, and it's like, yeah, because it's not for you to stick in your point and shoot and go take pictures of basketball hoops. That's not what Portra's for. And I'm not saying you can't use it for that. You can do whatever you want, but you can't really complain.
It's not, you can about buying a professional. It's not priced for that.
Right. It's priced for professional use. And same with, like, you know, you can't get upset at like, oh, you know, Ferraris are so expensive. Well, they're not made for you, man. They're made for people who have stupid money. Like, so you complaining about the price is, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, it's not.
I'll shoot Portra on 120, but I never shoot Portra 35mm ever.
I don't either, because it's just, it's expensive. And when I'm shooting,
and I know the way that I treat a 36 exposure roll is I kind of just blast through some of it.
The last seven exposures or whatever.
Oh, they're literally my feet as I'm walking to the lab.
Like, yeah, exactly.
But the thing is, well, it's like, part of the beauty of film is that it forces you to think and to not waste. It's to take images, like, you know, you shouldn't be blasting through like film stock like that. I mean, it's entirely up to you, obviously. If you're on a professional job and somebody else is paying for it, then go ahead, like, go nuts. But when you've spent your hard-earned money on it and you want to take certain shots, then like, take your fucking time. And like,
well, we get to the like point too of like, I think a lot of people want to shoot film because it's cool, and it is cool. Shooting film is really cool, but it is the new smoking. But people think that like, if you shoot film, the pictures are good because they're on film. When in reality, that's not true at all. And I know that because when I shoot like a roll of 35mm just fucking around, and I develop it and I go, God, I just wasted a roll of film on nothing shots. Like, why did I do this?
I remember the first time I started shooting film again, and I'd started watching, it was just as Negative Feedback had come out, and I was watching like early Negative Feedback videos, and I was like hyped. I had a dream about George Munsey last night.
you can't just gloss over that. What?
Yeah. So I had a dream where me, George, my friend Tom, Ed Scissor, who's friends with George, and my friend Fred, who is the wonderful music producer of Greenwood
Those are
Church.
All such British names. Tom, Fred, George.
Yeah.
Fred. I like Fred. That's a good
But they're name. Actually, so it's actually Greenwood Sharps, Ed Scissor, and, well, George. Anyway, listen to their music, by the way. Wonderful stuff. Anyway, we were at a fairground, and you know, you have those games where someone sits on a stool above water, and then you have to try and throw a ball at a target and hit them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was that. But before that, this is clearly playing on all my insecurities. I turned up to do, I didn't realize I was going to be on a shoot with George was going to be there. And we were doing a shoot together, and I was aware of how I was dressed. Now, I take, believe it or not, I think about how I dress. I'm a 36-year-old hipster. I have to. But I was wearing like a white school shirt, some bootcut jeans, I was wearing some Nike Dunks. And a Patagonia trucker cap in my dream. And I was like, right, I look like an absolute cock.
Wait, why were you wearing that? Such a weird outfit.
I don't know. It was what was
That's
on.
A weird outfit.
I was wearing.
Oh my God. Okay.
This is what I was wearing in my dream, right? And it was with George. And then there was some other, like, there was like some models and stuff. And I was like, this is just horrendous. I feel like such an idiot. And I had the wrong cameras with me.
The wrong cameras?
Then, yeah. Like, as in, like, for the job I was going to be doing, I just didn't have the equipment that I wanted for that job.
Okay.
I mean, you can always argue there's no wrong cameras, but there is for the job if you've got a certain style in your head. And we had to go down to this, and we were walking by somewhere, and George was like, I really want to take your photo, like, in this tree. So I was, like, sitting in this tree, and it was really, really hot, and I was trying to make my outfit look cooler, so I was, like, trying to roll up my bootleg jeans and, like, undo my white shirt. And then I just remember thinking, I look like a model. And he was like, and they were trying to, him and the models were trying to be really encouraging, like, no, you look cool. And I was like, I don't look cool at all. I'm a fucking idiot.
Wow.
Yeah. And then we got drunk in the dream as well. So then I woke up, and I have drink dreams. So, like, I wake up and I'm just like, oh my God, no, I got drunk last night. And then I realized that I didn't. And I was actually more glad about not being drunk. I was more glad about the fact that I hadn't been hanging out at a photo shoot in bootcut jeans than I had been about being drunk. Anyway, there was a point to this story. I was watching early negative feedback videos, and I watched an interview with Jason Lee as well, talking about A Plain View. Mm-hmm. And you know, you had that plain view aesthetic, the sort of low contrast Portra blues. And I remember looking at the film stock, and it was Portra 160 VC. Mm-hmm. And then I was watching negative feedback videos, and obviously you get those little windows of the images he's taken, and they're tiny, and then they look great, like, on your computer. Mm-hmm. And I thought, fuck, right, okay, yeah, I need to be shooting film again. That's what I need to do. And it was a combination of that and my daughter being born, and I was taking pictures of her on digital, and I just hated the way that, like, this beautiful little thing was digital and pixelated, and it wasn't tangible. Mm-hmm. So I bought a Olympus OM-1. Mm-hmm. And I bought some Portra.
Yeah.
I bought some Portra 800, which was really expensive actually at the time, considering this was like 5 years ago, 4 years ago, whatever. And then I took all these pictures, and I knew in my head exactly how they were going to look. They were going to look perfect. And then I brought them to a lab. I sent him off to a lab. I sent him to an expensive lab as well, because I was like, I'm a photographer. Because at this point, I'm a working professional photographer.
Yeah.
So I was like, I need to send off my images to a professional lab, because that's what these deserve.
Right.
They got back, and I was like, these are all absolute dog shit. Like, just shit.
Oh no,
like,
the Portra 800 didn't look perfect out of the.
Believe it or not, the Portra 800 did not make these look amazing.
Weird.
Because I didn't, they weren't exposed for what I wanted to try and do. The compositions were a bit shit. Like, it's like the same time I got my first, like, proper DSLR. I remember, like, taking photos with that, thinking that I was all of a sudden going to take great photos, and they just looked like.
It took me a couple of years to really get to a point where I was editing my digital work to look good. But that's, I mean, I see people, you know, just like burning through Portra, burning through film. And like, again, I'm just a guy with an opinion. Like, I'm not the arbiter of anything. I'm not like, I don't hold the key to any gates. Nothing. I just have opinions. But I have very rarely seen images on Instagram that I'm just like really compelled to like look at, you know, like a lot of it seems very pedestrian. And I can't help but think like, wow, people sure do spend a lot of money on film for really ordinary shots of like stuff.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make any, and like to the point where I look at my own work and I'm like, okay, I can put film in my Olympus XA today and go take it with me around, or I could have like a small digital camera that if I see something I like, I could take a snap. And then like, if I really want to take another picture of it later on film, like a good picture, like I can do that. But like last night I was up late, like just looking at used prices on eBay and stuff for like a Fuji X100V or like another X Pro 2. Cause I just like, I don't have a digital camera I can like take around with me. And I started to realize that like, I need to take a step back and stop fetishizing film.
Yeah.
And start using it as a tool more 100%. and less as like a conversation piece. Cause I feel like that's what it kind of becomes sometimes.
And when I got the X-T4, like that was a huge part of that for me. That was like, oh, right. Okay. No, I don't need to just be shooting everything on film all the time because I've romanticized it so much. Actually, I'm using a camera here, which feels like a great camera and takes great images. So like,
it's not just Fuji, right? There's other cameras that do this too. But like for us, I mean, for me, for a long time, Fuji's been my favorite. I feel like when I shoot Fuji cameras, the process feels more connected. It's kind of like driving a car with stick, driving a manual transmission versus driving automatic transmission. There's nothing wrong with an automatic transmission, but when you're driving a manual transmission car, you really feel the road in a different way.
Oh, you're going to.
And yeah.
You're going to upset Becca.
Does she not like driving stick?
No, she drives an automatic.
I do too, but that's just because the practicality of
driving. Because it's America. Everyone drives them.
That's not true. But, well, I mean, I guess a lot of people do. But for the most part, that's actually a really good analogy for it. Like, driving stick is really fun. And the feeling of it, the way the driving experience is when driving an automatic or a manual transmission car is very distinct and very fun, but not always practical.
And it's a great.
My daily driver, it's a Volvo. I love that car. But it's an automatic because, honestly, when I'm in bumper to bumper traffic or I'm going up a hill or whatever, I don't want to be fucking with a clutch. I just want it to do the thing I needed to do. Same with photography. We have the insane luxury of being able to shoot film still. And it's, I'm so grateful that it came back and there's a resurgence that we now still have film and now the market's here. And now there's people even putting new films out. I love that, but it's not always practical to shoot film. Like, there are very inexpensive point-and-shoot digital cameras that you can get, or even secondhand mirrorless cameras that are a couple generations old that are very affordable, that produce awesome pictures that can be, and this is kind of what I wanted to do, is like have like a walk-around camera that can like capture the moments I want. And then if I really want to, if I find something, if I find a moment that I really like and I want to go back and then commit that to like celluloid and really put it on like a roll of film, I can do that.
Thank you for the visual guide there. If anyone didn't see that, Christopher just held up a roll of film.
The patrons, I'm holding up a roll of film. If you want to watch these podcasts and see us interact in person, like on video, whatever.
If you want to see just how bad you can look after 12 years of solid alcoholism, you can have a little look at me.
Yeah, you can subscribe to my Patreon and you get they come out a day early or however many days early and whatever. The point is, I also think that a lot of people really take the Henri Cartier-Bresson decisive moment thing like way too far. Like, unless you're a photojournalist, like you can chill the fuck out a little bit. I think, like, I get it that like sometimes right place, right time, but like most of the photographers I see on Instagram are not shooting that way, and that's okay. No. You don't have to, but also
he shot that way because that was the equipment he had. Do you know what I mean? I just mean that, like, Yeah, I mean, there wasn't a... How many of these guys would be shooting digital? They'd be blasting digital left, right, and center, I would imagine.
Honestly, if I feel like if the X100 series and like the Ricoh GR digital cameras like that were out in that time, absolutely, they'd be using those cameras because they're brilliant. They're great cameras. The X100V, the X100 series of cameras has leaf shutters. They're silent. And you can trigger flash at any... at any shutter speed. It's I don't know. Anyway, the point is...
film prices are what they are. Get over
film
it.
Film prices are what they are because we made this happen because we made a demand for it.
Yeah. And so, just be more considerate about what you're doing. Take your time over it.
And if you want to shoot Portra and not have to worry about prices, be a professional photographer who shoots film. Make your clients pay for it. That's
all you
got
to do is become a professional photographer and get your clients to pay for it.
It's a line item on my invoice. Film.
There you go.
However much it is for film. Development. However much it is for development. Scanning. There's even a line item for like the time it takes for me to scan or whatever. Like
the biggest thing on my invoice is my payment deadline. That's the biggest thing. It's basically the rest of it's just all nonsense. There's just a huge thing at the bottom.
And none of my clients read that part. None of them ever have. They go, ah, yes. And then they take a shit and wipe their ass with it and flush it down the toilet.
You'll get paid when you get paid. And that'll be once you email us in 2 months' time to remind us to pay you.
Do we not pay you? Hold on. We're going to initiate a payment. It's going to be 2 to 4 weeks.
We're going to initiate a payment. But unfortunately, the person that originally started dealing with your invoice no longer works here. So we're going to need to pass on to Cypher, for God's sake.
Can you send us the invoice one more time? And can you break down line by line what we're paying for? You signed a contract. Anyway, so this is not to say that you can't shoot Portra if you're not a professional. That's absolutely not what I'm saying. You can shoot Portra. Anyone can shoot Portra. Anybody can shoot whatever film that they want. But to complain about the pricing is silly if you're not a professional photographer. If you are a professional photographer and you have to pay for your own film for whatever reason, then you have carte blanche to complain, for sure. You can complain if you want, but you should keep in mind that this is what film costs, because this is what film costs.
There we go.
Kodak got a lot of flack. I knee-jerk reaction when the pricing increase was announced originally. I was like, this is so stupid. Why would Kodak do that? And then someone who used to work at Kodak reached out to me and they're like, hey, let me tell you some stuff. And they let me in on some kind of insider knowledge that I can't share. But they basically set me straight. They were like, yo, this is why it costs this much. They laid it all out for me. And then what they told me made a lot of sense. It has a lot to do with like maintaining and rebuilding machines. Material costs, especially for, you know, materials that are only for a specific thing, like only for emulsion. It's a lot. And then also with COVID, every single, supply chain has been affected. Every single one, even Chipotle, you know, everyone.
Apart from the constant supply of COVID.
Right. COVID. Unlimited supply. You want COVID? You got it. You can get it at any point, anytime. Just go to a bar, go to a restaurant. Mm-hmm. Don't wear a mask. You got it, bud. You don't get vaccinated. Mm-hmm. We'll fill you right up with COVID.
And if you want to, you know, we'll top you right Jeopardy, up. Don't get vaccinated. Exactly. Then
anyway,
get COVID. Here, look. Let's
not
go
to get too. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's go. Let's go to a question.
We have questions, apparently.
We do. We've got questions.
No, wait. We didn't really dive into that conversation on the DM we got.
Yeah, we did. Look, I think we got it covered.
I just want to say that DM'd us, you know who you are. We know where you lit. I'm just kidding. I don't have any ill will towards this person. I'm actually really glad that they messaged us because
he
gave
us paid someone to find out where you live, though.
but I'm glad that they reached out because it allowed us to have a conversation to kind of have more of an understanding of each other. I think that they just
things like that also allow you to then reflect on yourself and go, what am I actually trying to say and what is my point? And both of our points, I think we're very clear on how we feel. We're punching up, not punching down.
Yeah, that's kind of the point, is we're punching up. Yeah, we want to look out for the little guys. we have no interest in, you know, talking down to people. Yeah. Also, it's, you know, not, this is not to garner any kind of pity for us at all. It's very hard to be opinionated out loud. And what I mean by that is like on a podcast, on a YouTube video, in public. Oh,
especially,
anyway.
Especially in a community that is so, it's very touchy. And part of the reason that we decided to do this podcast was to actually just have opinions and just be allowed to say them. And
it's hard because
I'm with anything. Like, if you don't want to listen to it, just don't listen to it.
Yeah, if you think we're stupid and our opinions are dumb, that's your opinion, man. And
you're dumb. Fine.
And you're dumb. But you don't have to listen, which is why, you know, we love America. It's so free. All the freedom that we have. The freedoms, all of them.
Shut up.
But what I was going to say was it's hard having an opinion and wanting to voice it publicly. And also to try to articulate myself in a way that gets across what I'm trying to say in earnest. And to not get kind of misconstrued, a big problem, not problem, but a big worry that I have is like things that I say are misconstrued. But that just happens, right? I can't control it. Someone's going to take me out of context or someone's going to not understand exactly where I'm coming from because it's my perspective. It's different. So,
I also get to hide behind just being Scottish. I just go, I'm just Scottish. And then people are like, oh,
yeah, okay, if you have an accent, it's much easier for you to navigate these waters.
Right. I'm going to give you sorry. No, I'm not sorry.
I was just gonna say that that's pretty much it. Like,
good.
He's a good person. We had a good conversation. I think we got some good points across, and yeah, it was good. I'm glad that we were able to have that conversation, and I'm glad that Mike didn't call him a fucking knob as soon as he got that message.
Yeah, knob would be. I'd probably go there. Right. I'm gonna give you a choice of three questions. I'm going to give you with no context. I'm going to say, do you want a question?
Well, wait. Why don't we just do all of them?
I'm going to go which one you want first.
Oh, okay.
Do you want a question that's directed to both of us and about and not about photography? Mm-hmm. Do you want a question that's directed at you, not about photography? Or do you want a question that's directed about me, about photography?
Okay. I'm going to be a little bit narcissistic, I guess. I'm really curious, what question is directed at me, not about photography. I'm interested to see what that is.
Okay. Here we go. Not photography related, but a question for Chris. What has been your guitar rig setup as of lately? And do you have a favorite pedal or type of pedal that you always keep on your board? P.S. My guitar player and me are fans of your work. I'm a drummer that really loves delving into guitar gear. Much more intricate and interesting than drum gear, in my opinion. If you'd like to check out our band, little shout out, we're called Retrograde Motion, and our first album, Here on Earth, can be found on all platforms.
I'm going to have to check them out after the pod. Okay, good question.
That's from Echo Lens. Who does Echo Lens have a real name? No.
They're no name.
Unless their name is actually Echo Lens. I'm going to guess it's not.
Probably not.
Okay, go.
Good question. You're going to think I'm funny. So ever since moving to Milwaukee, I don't have a rig per se, just because I haven't had a chance to buy an amp. I left my main guitar, my pedal board, and my practice amp. I left them in Los Angeles with my friend Darren because I didn't have room in my car for it. And then when I got here, I bought my Jazzmaster. And I have a few pedals here, but they're not plugged into anything at the moment. To give you an answer that makes sense, the pedal that I always keep on my board is probably a toss-up between the Ibanez DE7 delay, the Vintage Rat, and the Electro-Harmonix Cathedral Reverb pedal.
All excellent pedals.
Those are all, when I was in my band Unconditional Arms, those were kind of like my staples. Like,
great band.
Thank you. I love reverb. I just always have. I love good spring reverb. I love a good affected reverb. So the Cathedral is one of those pedals that's really cool. So I always have that. Or the Electro-Harmonix Holy Grail. I like to have them both, but if I had to pick one or the other, I'd probably pick the Cathedral, but the Holy Grail also, I love that pedal. And then as far as an amp, I'm going to get an amp here at some point. I just had to decide what. I was originally going for an AC30, but those are massive, heavy amps, and I don't think I need it for the projects that I'm working on here. So I might go with something smaller, maybe a Fender.
Fender.
I don't know. Just some small amp, maybe like a Blues Junior or something. I don't need a big amp here. I just need something I can run pedals into and then put a mic in front of. So that is the answer, I hope.
Great answer. And remember, everyone, please check out Retrograde Motion's first album called Here on Earth. It can be found on all platforms.
Retrograde Motion.
Yep. I'll be listening to that just after this.
All right. Now, cool. Good question. Lens, thank you.
Then had a question for me.
Okay, let's go.
Much more generic in terms of photography, which was, do I have a favorite black and white film stock?
I know the answer.
Do you?
I think so, but I might be wrong. Go ahead.
No, what do you think it is?
HP5.
No, it's not.
It's FP4, isn't it?
No, it's not.
What?
It's T-Max.
Oh, okay. You know, I should have known that.
Because I like contrast. HP5 is great when you want to add contrast afterwards, but if I don't want to and I just want to just get my negs and be like, and scan them and be like, these are banging, then I'm T-Maxing all the way.
That's the way to go,
because I think it's just, it's a nice solid ground between HP5 and Tri-X.
Have you shot FP4 at all?
I've shot FP4.
What do you think? Do you like it?
Yeah, that's my answer.
So I'm asking because I saw someone recently posted some work all on FP4. I think it was like at 800.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like really nice. It looked really, really good. And
Was it Robbie's stuff on the Discord?
Oh, maybe. It might have been. Robbie? Is that you, bud?
Because he
I don't remember
he
who it
put,
was.
He
bad.
Put like 4 or 5 35mm bangers up on the Discord.
Yeah, that might have been him then. But I just remember looking at it and going like, wow, I should give FP4 another look.
Yeah.
Because I've shot it a couple times and it's been kind of like, I think I shot it at box speed. And I was just like, yeah, this is pretty okay. But it's not going to, you know, it wasn't edging out HP5 or Tri-X or T-Max.
No, I think it was. Shout out to Robbie.
Shout out Robbie.
One year into his photography journey and he's knocking out some.
Honestly, every time he posts like new portraits or something, I'm just like, dang, like, he's like really going for it. And like, he's been doing a lot recently. And so he has like a lot of new work coming out. It's just like,
oh man, right, like man. He's taking a big leap, you know. He's 30, I think Robbie's 38, and he's just going to college to go and study photography. Fuck yeah. Good on him.
That's awesome. And his work is great.
Yeah. His work, I think, is tremendous. Much love, and Robbie.
It seems like Robbie's really carving his own thing out, and
he's got, that's what I said to
him
the other day. Like, it's amazing. He's got a style, and like, that's, to have a style like that early on is impressive. Like, it's not impressive. It just shows that you've got an eye and you've got some, as much as he does not believe in himself in the slightest. Mm. Like, I think that's why it's so great to have a community, I think, and to have something like Discord or Instagram or whatever else. And this thing where people can like, can actually have an interaction. It's not just about posting a picture up and having a like. You want people to be like, this is why it's great. Or, this is why what you've done is important. Mm-hmm. This is why what you've done is cool. Like, to have a definitive style to then build on is cool. And it's to actually embrace the fact that you've got something individual. Like, you're not just copying what everybody else has done. Whether or not you notice it or whether or not you're aware of it, to cultivate your own style is amazing.
Right. And it's really hard to do, and it's hard to do enthusiastically. I think his enthusiasm is really infectious. This concludes the section of us kissing Robbie's ass.
Well done, Robbie. okay, and this is a question for both of us, not photographer related, but I really like it as a question.
Okay.
And it's from Haroon. Now, it just says Haroon. Now, Haroon, if that's your name, sick name. If it's your Instagram name, sick name. What TV movie best friend characters do you think represent you both the most?
Jesus.
He was not a TV character.
Do you have an answer?
I want to say either
Ross and Chandler.
I was going to say more Sean William Scott and Ashton Kutcher in Dude, Where's My Car?
That's not a TV show.
It's a movie. What TV movie best friends? TV or movie or TV hyphen TV slash movie?
Oh, I see. Okay, got it. Okay, yeah.
I think maybe. What about Suits? Like Harvey and Mike.
I've never watched that show.
Oh, you fucking idiot! The fucking, you know, the future queen. Oh, she's not gonna be Queen of England anymore, is she?
What about Buffy and Angel from Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
I've never watched that because I'm not a massive gimp. Come on. My ex-wife
used
to watch it.
Such good 90s TV.
What about...
Or early 2000s, whatever.
What about Ren and Stimpy? Pinky and the Brain.
Yes! As soon as you said Ren and Stimpy, it's the first thing that came into my head. I don't know. I think there's a lot of nuance there. It's hard to pin down. I think that we encompass Mike and I contain multitudes, you know?
I think I'm the reactive sort of stupider one.
Have you ever seen the movie Dogma?
Yeah.
Okay. I think we're the Matt Damon and Ben Affleck characters in Dogma.
I think, yeah, we are the Matt Damon and Ben Affleck of podcasting. I mean,
and that's our show.
You're the Matt Damon because I've got the Affleck characteristics.
Really into Latinas and
really into Latinos, alcohol problem.
Playing Batman in the worst Batman movies.
Yeah, I'm also not that fussed about Jennifer Garner.
Oh my God.
We need like a Robin Williams type character in our lives as well, though.
We need Robin Williams in our lives.
I think we all need Robin Williams in our lives. So
my friend, so in elementary school, my best friend at the time, Lorenzo, he was cast as an extra in the movie Jack. And so he got to leave school for a couple of days and go film a couple of like,
that's when the little exterior... boy like aged really quickly, didn't he?
Yeah. Robin Williams' character is a boy who aged super quickly, so he looked like a man, but he's still like a kid.
Yeah.
But he was in a few exterior like playground scenes and some other like child crowd scenes. And he got to meet Robin Williams, and he said that it was the coolest thing. And I remember him telling me that he was really scared to meet Robin Williams, but Robin Williams walked right up to him and like tried to make him laugh. He said that Robin Williams was really hairy in person. His arms were super hairy. I get a bit
emosh when I see Robin Williams talk.
I'm sorry that we're taking this Robin Williams break, but in my childhood, his movies, Patch Adams, Mrs. Doubtfire,
Hook.
Jack, Hook, those movies, was such a constant. I don't know.
Rotten Tomatoes, what do you think Hook's got?
Oh, fuck, I don't know. That movie's actually really bananas. Like, if you look at it from, like, a position of, like, filmmaking, it's kind of, like, out
just
there.
Just what do you think it's got?
99%.
No, it deserves it. It's got, like, 32%.
Shut up, Hook.
I know, it's, like, one of the best films
ever
made.
Is that critics or audience?
I can't remember because it's actually one of the best films ever made. That, and also Mighty Ducks 2 has barely got a good rating either, which is a shame because it's genius.
Honestly, yeah. Let's see. Hook, Rotten Tomatoes. Let's see what it says. I gotta know. 29%. Okay.
That's farcical.
Tomato meter, 29%. Audience score, 76, which is a little bit above tepid.
Everybody that listens to this podcast, forget about anything we ever say. I want you to all go and rate that film at 100% because it's the best.
Jumanji is 62% audience? What? That doesn't make sense to me. Grinch is... How the Grinch Stole Christmas is 56%? That doesn't make any sense.
I'll tell you what the Grinch is stealing. The Grinch is stealing Rotten Tomatoes. That's absolutely garbage.
The Grinch is amazing. The Disney Disney's Pocahontas, the original, 64%.
Listen, we're going down a wormhole here. I wish I had
started. What the fuck is with Rotten Tomatoes, dude?
To answer your question, apparently we are Matt Damon, Ben Affleck from Dogma.
Yeah, we're two wayward angels who've lost our way.
Yeah,
exactly. And Alanis Morissette, as God, will show mercy on us at the end, kind of.
I hope she does.
And Jane Silent Bob are there. Chris Tucker's there.
Jason Lee's there.
Jason Lee is there. That is the other thing I was going to say is Jason Lee stars in that movie as a demon. I can't remember his name. Azrael? I can't remember his name.
I'm going to keep pestering him until he comes on this bloody podcast.
Have you pestered him at all?
Yeah, he's even read my messages.
He's read your messages and he said, no fucking way, I'm good.
We've had conversations before on Instagram and now I've chatted to him about the podcast and he's never even replied to me, the bastard.
Oh, that's him. That's him saying, no, thank you.
Yeah, enjoy. But he went and did bloody McDougal's podcast, didn't he? Spoke to that bearded tit. Right. Anyway, that's the end of the podcast. On which note, little word about our sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
This podcast, he's still on Rotten Tomatoes. This podcast is sponsored by Newground Coffee in Oxford. Newground are a coffee roastery, but also a social. I'm going to do this as Sean Connery. We're also a social enterprise. Also a social enterprise.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. Sean. He's dead as fuck. I once was in a... I've seen Sean Connery before.
Sponsor plug is going off the rails.
Yeah. Anyway, sponsored by Newground Coffee, who are not only a wonderful coffee roastery, but also a social enterprise. They use their business to employ and train ex-offenders, taking people from prison and giving them skills within the coffee industry to hopefully give them a chance, as they are often some of the most overlooked people, especially in Britain society these days.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to buy some of their coffee, and it is wonderful, I can attest to that, as can Christopher.
Yeah, speaking of which, I need more.
I shall send you some more. Yeah.
Thank you.
Or you can go to newgroundcoffee.com and at checkout, put in the code SPOOKY20 for 20% off your first order.
Of coffee.
Of coffee, yeah.
And you know what? I thought it would take a long time to ship from the UK. It takes a couple of days. Doesn't take that long.
That's not even like one of those like made up podcast plugs. Like that's really true. It didn't take long at all. If only
one time
scanner.
Mike was like, "I'm gonna send you coffee," and I said, "Cool." And I expected it to show up in like a month. 3 days later, I had coffee. It was amazing.
Hopefully, my scanner turns up as fast.
Listen, it's like 16 pounds. It's big. It'll get there. I packed it very well.
Hey, listen, and then like a month and a half, me and you can have a Wista party in America.
We will have a party in America together. We will hug. We will smell each other.
Mm-hmm.
We will have a live, not a live pod, but a pod in the same room.
Yeah.
We'll have a live stream on my Patreon for sure.
Yeah, we'll probably, as I've already said, if I'm not in a photo department video, I'm going to be quite upset. There should be a photo department video of me, Christopher, and Brian Barks hanging out with our 4x5s.
Duh. It's going to be a lot. Oh, that's what we'll do. We'll do a large format thing.
Mm-hmm. Right, everyone. It's been a pleasure as always. Thank you very much for listening. We will be back next week. We're trying to make this weekly now. We'll be back next week with a guest. We've got a couple lined up. So things are going to get exciting, y'all. I'm practicing my American.
I'm excited.
Come over there.
Y'all? That's not what. Okay. Yeah, that's what we do. That's fine.
I'm going to turn up and be like, oh, hey, guys, I'm Mike.
Is that your Tiger King impression? What is that?
I don't know. I can do
it's like
gay
cowboy.
I can do like a southern type of voice. I could be like, oh,
I don't
hi.
Know what it is. Every time you do a southern voice, it's like a gay southern voice, which is nothing wrong with that, but it's just interesting.
I'm just out of prison from doing
you
nasty,
sound like
nasty things to motor vehicles.
Austin, what's his name? The Reno 911 guy, the new boot goofing guy.
Oh, shoot, I think I sound more like the creepy old man from Family Guy.
Hi, Chris.
With the whistle and the lisp. Yeah. Oh my god. Okay, thank you guys for listening. Take everything we say with a grain of salt. We love you.
We love you all. Doodle pip.
Doodle pip.